Hi, I'm Leon Gorin, president of PEO Leadership, a peer-to-peer leadership advisory firm. We're an amazing community of CEOs, presidents, and senior executives. Ask yourself, are you learning as fast as the world is changing? It's time for Ontario business leaders to band together for counsel and support. It's time for you to tap into the business wisdom of our peer groups and unlock new ways to grow. I want you to come out of this COVID crisis a better leader and your organization ready for what's next. Take the first step at peo-leadership.com.
Special thanks to Vaughan Metropolitan Centre for helping us bring you today's PEO Leadership's Way Forward podcast.
All right, we've already kicked it off again. So, Leon Gorin, CEO of PEO Leadership, and I'd like to just welcome you all again. We've taken the summer months off, so it's our first month back. We're really, really excited. I know we have a bunch of members in the room here. And we also have a number of guests joining us today, and I'm sure there'll also be guests listening to the podcast and later on the live webcast going forward. So just to start, I just want to make sure everybody understands PEO Leadership, knows who we are. I apologize ahead of time for those members who have to listen to me talk about this. But just to give you a sense, so, you know, we've been around for over 25 years now, and really we're in the business of trying to help leaders realize their personal, professional, and organization growth objectives. We know, you know, we've been dealing with leaders for so many years, and some of the challenges as a leader, whether you're an executive, whether you're a rising star, it's sometimes very lonely at the top. And so what we offer is sort of an accompaniment along the journey. And I'll explain a little bit about the process, but it's really, yes, it's lonely as a leader. Two, the world is changing so rapidly today. I mean, we don't even need to talk about the 18 months before of COVID, but even before that, it was insane in terms of the rapid changes and the necessity to continue learning, right? Especially as adults, what are we doing to think about continuing to push ourselves, to challenge ourselves? So our program's really simple. It's a three-legged stool, I like to explain. The first leg, you get an advisor. He or she is an ex-CEO, president, and a consultant, and they're really going to work with you, setting the tone and understanding what success looks like for you. I like to pick the year end. So let's say it's December 31st, 2022. Have you sit down, talk to us about success around your business, your health, your wealth, your family, your career. That's the first leg of the stool. The second leg of the stool, well, that's a group. It's a group. It's an advisory board, a place where you can go, where you get to know the individuals around the table, usually around 12 of them. It's a shared advisory board. The door closes. Everyone's on an NDA. And it's an opportunity for you to share some of the issues and opportunities you're dealing with and leverage the wisdom of a group. And then the third leg of the stool, well, it's the community as a whole. And we're very, very fortunate. It started as a Toronto community. It's expanded. We're now in North America. We're affiliated with two US partners, but it's a very giving community. And the idea there is, how can we leverage the wisdom of an entire community to try and help you get from A to B? And so that's how we deliver on it. And I urge you all, if you have a chance, you may have seen emails. We run this 8-week course. It's really 4 sessions. It's only 2 hours in each session. It's not crazy. It's virtual. It's at the CEO, president level, or owners. And then there's one for the rising stars coming along. So you visit the website, you can take a look at it. They're fantastic programs. There's one launching this month, and please get engaged. So that's all I'll tell you about us for now. You can find out more. I want to talk about Andrew Tarvin. So let's call him Drew, because we're in conversation. I know when he writes, he talks about Andrew. He talks about it being much more efficient. I am going to mess this up entirely through the next hour because it's never easy. I'll call him Andrew, then I'll call him Drew. But Drew has come to be known as the world's first humor engineer, and it's all about getting better results while having some fun. Combining his background as a project manager at P&G with his experience as a stand-up comedian, he reverse engineers the skill of humor in a way that is practical, actionable, and gets results in the workplace. Through his company, Humor That Works, Andrew has worked with more than 35,000 people at over 250 organizations, so the likes of Microsoft, IBM, the United Nations, FBI, and the Red Cross, to solve human challenges such as employee engagement, workplace culture, really with humor solutions. Drew's a best-selling author. I got his book here, and I'm going to promote his book, You see lots of blue stickies through this thing. He's been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Inc. magazine, Forbes, and Fast Company, and was recently recognized as a visionary under 40 by the P&G Alumni Network. His TEDx talk on the skill of humor has been viewed by more than 10 million people. Drew, Andrew, there's the efficiency piece. Anyway, welcome to the Way Forward, Andrew, or Drew.
Thank you. It is an honor to be here and part of such a great community. I mean, hearing certainly when we had the conversation before, understanding a little bit what PEO leadership does, but what a fantastic chance for people to be able to connect, to grow, maybe to share some of the humor of what's going on, but also to find ways to laugh at things that happen so that you do not cry. So it's an honor to be here with you and, of course, all of you watching as well.
That's great. So just from a logistic perspective, please, in the chat, in the Q&A, post your questions. We'll come back to them. Drew and I are going to sort of carry on a little bit of a conversation, and we'll go from there. And Drew, I want to kick it off. I'm reading your book, and I thought you got to lead off with Grandma's Story. I don't know which grandma story, because there were multiple grandma stories in the book. So I'll leave that to you.
Okay, yeah, certainly. So I'll share the grandma story that I think most people tend to reference back when I talk about it. It's the one that kicks off the TEDx talk as well. So I remember this was probably 8 or 9 years ago now at this point, but I was hanging out with some friends in New York City. And I get a buzz in my pocket. So I looked at my phone and I was surprised to find that I had a text message from my grandmother. Because at the time, my grandmother was 83 years old. She was someone who grew up without a phone at all, was now on an iPhone, which was pretty impressive. And she had never sent me a text message before, but she sent me a text. And the text said, "Dear Andrew, trying out texting, love your grandma." And it was just amazing. It was adorable. And I was like, oh, you know, she thinks it's a letter, right? The Dear Andrew, the love, your grandma. And I was like, so I sent her a text back and I was like, "Hey, grandma, it's a text. You don't have to send all that." And her response was, "Dear Andrew, okay, love your grandma." And of course, my favorite part of the whole thing is that she always sent your grandma, like love your grandma, not love grandma. Like I would be confused if she didn't say your grandma. Like I'd be like, wait a second, whose grandma is texting me? Like, is it my grandma? Is it your grandma? Is it some creepy dude named grandma? My grandmother got better with texting over time, but she hasn't learned quite everything. Because a few months after that, I was at an event speaking in Switzerland, came back and sent a message to my grandmother just to say like, "Hey, I just got back from Switzerland." And her response was, "Dear Andrew, WTF. It's like, really? So I called my grandmother up because I was so confused by it. Like, I was like, "Grandma, what do you think WTF means?" And she was like, "Oh, well, someone at Bridge told me it means, wow, that's fun." And I was like, "Yes, that is exactly what it means." Cause I'm not going to explain what WTF really means to my grandmother. And the thesis of that, the reason why I start my TEDx story that way is that is to say that I think the world would actually be a little bit of a better place if we all thought WTF like my grandmother, if we all thought, wow, that's fun, finding ways to add a little bit of humor and levity throughout our day. And so that's kind of the thesis of that particular talk on the skill of humor. But it's also a great way just to introduce people to who I think is an awesome woman in my life, which is my grandmother.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that story. So, you know, it's interesting. In your book, you talk about stress and the population, the number of people that are so stressed out, the engagement at work. I mean, we have all these stats. And then COVID hits 19 months ago, right? Mm-hmm. And things aren't getting any better. In fact, you know, it was 85%. Who knows? Maybe gone up to 98% of the mm-hmm. people. And now we're in September. We're in the fall. And I don't know, you know, in Canada and Toronto, where we are, we've really gone through a lot. We've had a lockdown. It's been severe here. And now we're asking people to return to work. There's a lot of more stress there. Inspiring, engaging. It's a tough time right now. And so humor, and it's one of the reasons I reached out to you months ago. I go, September will be a great time. Like, how do we bring these people back, inspire them, engage them? And I love the idea of humor and sort of the benefits in the workplace. But maybe you can give us some perspective on your thinking on that, but also maybe define what you mean by humor, because there's a lot of different things. It's like making someone laugh or just smiling or doing something fun.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that is an important place to start, is let's set this stage of what we mean by humor. And so, in fact, I would love to take advantage of the chat as we go through today, because I'm a stand-up comedian, so I'm used to having that kind of audience feedback, and we can't always have that. So, you know, if I share something that makes you laugh, you can add an LOL to the chat, or if Leon says something that is brilliant, you want to like quote him or something like that, do that. But let's practice that right now and go ahead and share in the chat. If you are kind of watching this live, share in the chat, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the word humor? So I'd love to see what your responses are. And if you're listening to this later, think to yourself, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the word humor? So from Diana, we hear laughter, we see smiling, we see laughter, right? A lot of laughter coming in, maybe some giggles, feeling good, making other people feel good, a comedy club. Clever, right? Absolutely. These are all components of humor. And it's interesting because a lot of times when we hear the word humor, we think of comedy, or we think of stand-up comedy, or we think of the comedy club. And it's interesting because a comedy club is kind of the great equalizer when it comes to quote unquote pure funniness. And this is why we sometimes do a C-suite comedy challenge, where we will take executives through a comedy boot camp, and then they will do stand-up comedy in a comedy club, because it can be terrifying. Some people hear that and they're immediately terrified. And it's like, well, yeah, if you get better at that, you're going to be way better at presenting in front of a board meeting, et cetera. Now, the good news is for the people that thought that was interesting, it's like, great, chat with us. We're happy to do it. But for the majority of people that are like, that sounds terrifying, recognize that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about humor. We're not talking about stand-up comedy level of funny or intensity. Instead, we're talking about see some other things, like Robert says happiness, or Mike says smiling, or Carol says being a little bit clever. So humor is defined as a comic, absurd, or incongruous quality causing amusement. So comedy is included, but it could also be just something a little bit different, something that causes a smile. Could be something just a little incongruous that you have in a virtual meeting, when someone's like maybe talking on mute or something like that, it gets them to smile or laugh or lean in a little bit more. And so when we talk about humor in the workplace, we're not talking about making it funny. We're just talking about making it a little bit more fun.
Can you, we'll get into, I know, appropriate and inappropriate. People will send lots of questions on that. They have already. But you talk a little bit about different styles. And I thought that was really ingenious in terms of, because everybody thinks it's difficult. Like we panic. Mm-hmm. But there's different ways and different styles of doing this. Maybe just quickly sort of putting us in a summary around that so people understand.
Yeah, great kind of high level view is to recognize that psychologist Rod A. Martin defined four styles of humor when we think about the definition of humor. And the first style is affiliative humor. This is positive and inclusive humor. You can think kind of Mr. Rogers in the United States, or just think of like the team building activities that you do where basically everyone is included. And that's a fantastic form of humor to use as a leader, because you're building a community with that humor. Then you have self-enhancing humor, and self-enhancing humor is a positive form of humor, but the target is yourself. And so this is a way of dealing with life's hardships. You mentioned stress, which we can certainly go into a deeper dive of how does humor help you to manage stress. But self-enhancing humor is one of those great strategies. It's kind of like Kurt Vonnegut said, laughter and tears are equal responses to frustration and exhaustion. I myself prefer to laugh because there's less cleaning up to do afterwards. Right. And so it's to say self-enhancing humor is like, how do I find the humor in the difficult situation? How do I find the humor even in something like virtual, right? We're joining so many virtuals and virtual meetings. And to me, I thought it was really interesting to see at the beginning of the pandemic, you had so many people that would join a meeting like this, join what I call the turtle, where it's like, why is there so much headroom? Yeah, exactly. You got a nice header. They would do the opposite, where they'd be too close to their camera and they'd do what I call the Batman. Or like, you know, there's just the absurdity of we're doing virtual meetings. We've been doing it for 18 plus months. And yet it's still inevitable that at some point someone's going to get stuck on mute and they're going to keep talking.
Oh, we just lost her.
Exactly. That was a little Zoom prop humor for you, right? Yeah. So the people listening to the podcast are like, what happened? It's me intentionally pressing the mute button. But like, it's us finding that humor in the day-to-day life, right? That's one of the ways that we can manage stress, or the kind of the absurdities of human existence in some ways. And so that's self-enhancing humor. Then you have two forms of negative humor. There's self-defeating humor. This is a negative form of humor where the target is yourself. And this can be good in high status positions because self-deprecating humor helps to make you a little bit more relatable, reduces status differential. So, you know, as a speaker, sometimes I will mention I am a very skinny person. I was born 3.7 kilograms. That's 8.3 pounds and then stayed that way till I was 15 years old. Right. Joking about kind of how skinny I am. But it basically says, hey, I don't take myself too seriously. And I recognize like we can have this kind of relationship with each other. Now, that's really good in the workplace when used sparingly and in a high status position. If you use self-deprecating humor too much, then people start to say like, wait, does this person have self-esteem issues? Or is there something going on? Is there something deeper? But as a leader, it can be a great form to use. And then finally, the last thing, and then I'll wrap up, is that there's aggressive humor. That's a negative form of humor where the target is other people. And our aggressive humor includes things like sarcasm and satire and things that might be really great with your friends or really great for comedy TV shows, much harder to do well in the workplace because what you think, especially as a leader, you think is playful banter with an employee. Because of your status differential, they might take it as aggressive humor where you're just being mean to them or you're being too aggressive. And so it's one that we tend to avoid until you have a really strong relationship with someone that you avoid the sarcasm, satire, banter, et cetera. So does that make sense in terms of those four kind of
primary? Yeah, no, that's a great summary of that for sure. And they can go deeper when if you pick up Drew's book, you can definitely go a little deeper on that and through some different examples. You know, I keep thinking stress, sleep deprived, a laundry list of to-do things that is endless, right? And places to be. And I'm like, oh yeah, I got to be funny. That's all I need. So add that onto my list as well. Now I'm going to be funny because according to Drew, I would be much more productive. So
Of the whole list of things that you listed, I would hope that humor is the most fun of those to do, right? You're like, I'm stressed, but also I got to add humor. Like, hopefully it's a fun thing to add a little bit of humor to things. And it's less about, and we can talk more about this, but the idea is that humor is a skill, which means it can be learned. And the question isn't, are you funny? The question is, what kind of funny are you? In fact, we now have a new assessment post-book. We came up with this assessment to help people understand their natural humor persona. So hopefully it doesn't feel as intimidating as like, I've got to completely learn this brand new skill set, but it's more about unlocking your natural sense of humor, the one that you do have when you're with family and friends, and then adapting it so that it's appropriate for the workplace.
So let's talk about that skill set, right? So It's part of that whole learning thing. We got to keep pushing ourselves. We got to adapt new skills. We know if we could do this well, or even start to do this well, it'll really make a difference. And it'll make a difference right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably exponential right now in terms of making a difference as we got people coming back. You set out a whole bunch of strategies. I know you go into organizations and you work with different people in different organizations. Where do you usually start, like with these individuals and sort of moving them in baby steps? So I'm thinking about the 100 people in the audience today. Mm-hmm. What's my first step here, Drew? What do I do?
Well, the first step is the conscious decision to want to do it, to recognize that in today's work environment, this was true pre-pandemic, but only accelerated in the pandemic, that humor is desperately needed. Because if you think about the moments of levity that we used to have, we don't have them in a virtual environment, or it's a lot harder to bring them together. Like maybe you have missed over the past, the like hallway conversations or the small talk in the elevator, or even the smile, you know, in the hallway, or like maybe you've had a meeting and sometimes it's a little bit of a tougher meeting, but then you were able to joke with someone after that meeting is over and you can kind of resolve any tension that was there. Well, now in a virtual environment, we're constantly hitting leave before we get a chance to have those moments. And then as we start to enter back into the office, you have the like, well, are we wearing masks? In which case you can't have that same level of connection. Or is there the still slight awkwardness of like, hey, are you safe? Am I safe? Are we okay here? Like what's going on? There's all this additional tension that exists. And so I think it's really important to understand that it's an important part of how to be an effective leader. And that's what the research shows. In fact, another question for you all to answer in the chat, and I recognize it's a dumb question, but it's an important one to answer. So go ahead and answer in the chat. Would you all rather do something that is fun or not fun? Okay, like we'll give that as an answer. Fun or not fun? Like I said, it's a dumb question. Sandra immediately was like, fun. Mike was like, fun for sure. We've got fun, capital fun. We've got like all of it, like 99.9% of the people that we talk to say fun. And people are like, unless it's illegal or costs too much money, like, no, I'm going to choose fun. Which then stands to reason, if we were to make our emails a little bit more fun, do you think people would be more likely to read them? Or if you were to make your meetings a little more fun, do you think people would be more likely to attend? Or if you were to make your own work a little bit more fun, would you be more engaged in it? And the research shows us the answer is yes. There are over 30 benefits to using humor in the workplace, backed by research, case studies, real world examples. They've been written up in all manner of magazines, New York Times, as well as like the Harvard Business Review that maybe your wife with a diploma on the wall has read or whatever. Like there's tremendous benefits to using humor. So it starts first with this conscious decision to say, okay, yes, this is something that I want to do.
Okay. So I'm there. I am so there. I have a small team relatives to some of these members and some of the clients in there. You list out like 10 strategies. And you also talk about a map, like in terms of the M and the A and the P. Which one, where do I start between those? And
we start with a map, I think. So just by a quick way of background, as mentioned, as people were joining, my degree is in computer science and engineering from The Ohio State University. And so I am someone who loves solving problems, right? I do Sudoku and Kenkan for fun. Like as a child, I didn't think of them as math problems. I thought of them as math opportunities. And the reason why I call myself a humor engineer is that when I was a computer science engineer at Procter & Gamble, I was solving problems for the workplace using things like computers and technology. And now the reason why I call myself a humor engineer is because I'm helping organizations solve their problems of employee engagement, et cetera, using things like humor. And so we start with the map because my encouragement of you all using humor is not because it's going to make the workplace more fun. That's like an added benefit, but because it's also going to make you more effective. And the way that we can make sure that we are effective with that humor is what we do or what we train and work with organizations or when we're doing one-on-one work, et cetera, is we frame things through what we call the humor map. So the map stands for your medium, your audience, and your purpose. So the medium is how are you going to execute that humor? Because, you know, doing something over a virtual meeting is very different than doing something personally, like in person, which is very different than something that you might send in an email, right? Like in a virtual meeting, you get exposure into my home. This is part of the thing of like what we need in terms of increased authenticity. So in fact, we can play another fun virtual game right now, just because we're here. I'll tell you that my wife decorated one of these shelves behind me. I decorated the other, and I'm not sure if you can tell which one did which. If you had to guess, Leon, which one do you think my wife decorated?
I'm going top shelf.
Yeah, top
shelf. Plant there. You don't expect everyone is a plant guy.
Exactly. You know? People were like, you know, hey, he is an engineer. He's an engineer. He clearly did not put this up here, right? This was my wife. We got a plant. We got a picture of the two of us. We got a watercolor painting of Calvin and Hobbes that my brother did for me. And then I attempted to do a credibility bookshelf. You know how like people have a credibility bookshelf where they share a bunch of books about how smart they are.
It's very
clean. I don't have very many physical books, so it looks like I can't read. So that's a virtual thing. That works virtually, but clearly not going to work if I'm in an in-person environment. Or sarcasm, et cetera, not going to work very well when it's in an email. So that medium becomes really important. The second component is your audience. And the audience is who is going to receive that humor. What is your relationship to those group of people? And then what does that audience need? What do they expect? And how can you deliver what they need in a way that they don't quite expect? And this actually goes back a little bit to those four styles that we mentioned. Because Leon, I don't know if you are like this at all or not, but some of my friends, particularly from university, we are part of that group where like, you know, if we don't make fun of you, then it means that we don't like you, right? We have that banter back and forth. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Right. So you have that. Well, that's true with my friends, right? So that in that scenario, that banter that could have come across as aggressive humor, because it's how we are as a friend group, it's actually in a way affiliative humor. So your relationship oftentimes or the audience dictates whether or not something is really funny or potentially inappropriate. So you have to be able to adapt. And then the final component is the purpose, right? And that's the most important one, which is to say, why do you want to use humor? Not just humor for the sake of humor, but what's your ultimate goal? And it's from that purpose that we derive those 10 humor strategies, because to say, okay, what the humor that you use to increase productivity or to reboot stress is different than what you would use as a leader to connect with people or to influence them.
No, that's great. So I'm going to dive into your strategy. There was one that I actually picked up and have used, because the one thing we like to do icebreakers sometimes. And I'm actually not the greatest at it. We start a meeting. I got the board meeting. You know, do you know an icebreaker? Or listen, I got to drive value for them. What's the value of an icebreaker? I'm just wasting time. But as I read some of your stuff, it sort of reinforced, if you can make light of something, just get people warmed up, and warmed up, maybe smiling, laugh, will actually spark some either critical thinking or some creativity. And you had one exercise, which you said, I love it, is let's talk about, I want you to pair up or go around the room, talk to me about your last name and where it came from. And it, you know, I just start thinking about it. Everyone's got a story for a last name, and it usually just gets people smiling. It really resonated.
Great. And so you can do that as a last name or even a first name, like the story of your name, either one. And for me, it's really helpful. I really like that as an icebreaker activity, because it helps me to remember their name. Because rather than it just being like kind of a quick thing that I learn, it's like, oh no. Okay. So my last name is from Tarvin, England. So my ancestors immigrated from Tarvin, England, a very small town outside of Manchester, England, and came to the United States in like the late, early 1800s or something. And so like, oh, I'm more likely to remember that, because it's like, oh yeah, what was it like? Oh, that's right. From that one place, right? You have additional context. And the first name, what's the story of your first name, is really powerful, because as Dale Carnegie said in How to Win Friends and Influence People, is that a person's name is the most important word to that person in any language many times, because it's the one word or the one collection of sounds, which is what a name is, that you have associated with since basically the day you were born. And so by learning their name and learning the story about it, you connect at that human level, which is only going to help you as a leader.
Yeah, I just thought that was a great idea. It could be used anytime. Yeah, well, the other go ahead.
I was just going to say, just very quickly on the icebreakers, like this, I think, is a great thing to do, because it can also happen pretty quickly, right? It doesn't have to be something that takes a lot of time. In fact, go ahead and share in the chat. I'd love to learn from the group. What's the first thing you all remember buying with your own money? Share in the chat the first thing you remember buying with your own money. Because this is a question, like in virtual or otherwise, that you can just, hey, quickly, we're going to go around and quickly answer this question. It's going to take 2 minutes or whatever. And you're already starting to buy this connection, right? Like Rick, Anna, and a few of you already have candy as that same thing. So right now you can talk, what kind of candy? Was it chocolate or was it otherwise? Music, a CD, a Billy Joel album, right? That specificity helped us to learn a little bit more. We've got gum, a bike, Nintendo games. For me, it was a G.I. Joe toy, knowing, you know, now you know that, knowing half the battle or whatever, right? But this is just an instant connection where now after the meeting, you might say like, oh, hey, I didn't know you were a Billy Joel fan. Let's talk about that. Or how many concerts have you been to or whatever. It's just a small thing to create these connections at that human level. And it doesn't have to take a lot of time. And to your point of like, hey, I've got to drive value for the shareholders or for this board. Well, relationships are part of the value, right? If you're in business, you need relationships. And the stronger you feel in relationships, the studies show that you're going to be able to solve problems a little bit more. And then Leon, to your point, if we add a little bit of humor, it's also going to make us a little bit more creative to be better able to solve some problems as they arise.
Yeah, no, that's great. The other one I liked was you had playing your work. And I know you were talking about it from, it was an individual thing to think about it from a, you know, as leaders, we think about that. But then I thought about it right through the organization. If you could teach people how to play with their work, because certainly there's, I mean, it's like having purpose, right? Trying to reinforce purpose at every level within your organization to create some excitement, some inspiration. But playing in your work environment also, and I don't mean tinkering that you break down lines and stuff like that, but making your job fun. Mm-hmm. Any ideas around that, like that you've worked with different companies and trying to get them to incorporate that into their teams?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's one of these maxims that we share, is that what gets fun gets done, right? It goes back to the dumb question that we shared. If something's a little bit more fun, you're more willing to do it. And that's what they show in research. And I think to your point, a big part of what we do is about creating ownership for the individual. I mean, that is the one thing that I've added is my humor notebook where it says you are responsible for your own happiness. And we very much believe that when we're training organizations, we're doing that at the individual level, that you have to take ownership of your own work. But you're exactly right. When a leader does it, that's when you start to see a cultural change of adding some of this stuff or encouraging it. And so one way to play your work is gamification, right? You see this in exercise all the time. Like, I don't know if you've heard, there's an app called Run Zombie Run for people who are exercising. You listen to this app, and it will tell you that like a zombie is chasing after you. So you have to run faster. And if you don't run fast enough, the zombie catches you or whatever. And so it's just a way to add a little bit of a sense of play to the work that you're doing. Can also be something simple. One of the things that I like to do is if I'm reading emails and I start to get bored in those emails, I'll start to read those emails in an accent in my head. So I'll be like, okay, what would this sound like if, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger had sent me this email or the Incredible Hulk? And it's just a way to stay a little bit more engaged. And there's a lot of small things that you can do. Even the gamification thing of, I know some sales teams where it's like, hey, we ring a bell when this thing happens, or that we do this thing to celebrate at the end of the week, X, Y, or Z. Those small things, those game elements make it at least a little bit more fun. And I'm not talking about, you're not going to make this so much fun that people are like, you don't even have to give me money. I'm just going to show up because I want to be like, no, but if you can make something 1% more fun or 5% more fun or 10% more fun, you're going to increase that engagement.
Yeah, I know. We all talk about barbecues, you know, evenings out. I get it. They don't happen that frequently. They happen less frequently now with COVID. So that's why it resonated with me. Can I make their job, their environment a little more fun and create some more happiness within themselves, right? And Absolutely. So that really resonated. I want to come back to your P&G experience, right? Take you back to those days when you were first hired, you were working there, but they gave you a lot of latitude. Mm-hmm. And maybe just for the audience, give them a sense of, because we have some very large organizations here too. It could go off the rails by giving people latitude as well. But in your case, it didn't. And it really helped out.
Yeah. Well, and I think that part of it is if this requires really good hiring, right? But if you're hiring good people, if you're hiring talented people, then you kind of want to get out of their way. And that's kind of the mentality of P&G. And you also recognize, so P&G is a promote from within company. Every single CEO from within the organization came from within the organization. It's not like they're going to poach the CEO of Coca-Cola or some other organization to come in and do things. It's like, no, it's got to come from the ranks within P&G, which means they have to have really good leadership development, which is why they are typically in the top two or three list of, like, in terms of CEOs for other companies, that they've developed really strong leaders. So They have to know a little bit about leadership development. Part of that starts with hiring, absolutely. But part of it starts with then giving latitude for people to grow. So the first week of my job, my manager told me that at P&G, it is better to beg for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. And so that is probably maybe advice or a cliche that you've heard before. But for me, as someone who is fresh out of university, it was incredibly empowering. It was like, oh, I get to own my experience. I'm not going to be micromanaged, but instead I get to own this experience. And I'll admit, as someone who is coming just out of university, I was like, okay, that sounds nice, but I want to see if my manager actually means it. So I decided to try to, like, test them just a little bit. Like, and I didn't do anything clearly illegal. It's not like I sold company secrets or the deodorant secrets, which is something that P&G makes. But I was like, you know, can I test the bounds a little bit? So I started to add jokes at the ends of my emails, just because I love puns and I love wordplay. So I'm like, okay, what if I add a little pun down here at the bottom? What if I say something like, you know, I think the key to being a good ghost is to act super natural. So a little pun, something there. What if I add a pun related to the email in some way? So if I'm sending shipment reports, can I say something related to shipments, or can I say something related to Excel? And then I started to do, like, I started to teach improv exercises to my project team members. I started to host and offer to be the MC for events that were, like, way more senior than what I was. Like, I had no right attending the event, but I was the MC, so it kind of worked. And the thing that I did that I thought for sure I was going to have to beg for forgiveness for was I proclaimed myself the corporate humorist of P&G. And I got business cards made, and I kind of assumed that someone would stop me, you know, like someone from HR or legal would come up and be like, uh, you, you can't just create your own job title. But no one ever did. People started referring to me as the corporate humorist. And from that, I was able to build. And this is where I discovered kind of all of these benefits to humor. For the organization, it was a benefit because I started training other people internally about this. And I was still doing my project management job, but I was so much more excited to show up in the workplace because in addition to being a project manager, I got to do this thing that was a passion. I got to do this thing in my way, and it was helping me to unlock and tap into that potential that was there.
It's a great story. It ties into your promote fund strategy, right? One of those strategies. And I really like it because it takes the pressure off the leader, right? Other than you got to hire the right person. So I got to look out for stand-up comedians now and engineers with background. But assuming I hire the right person, you know, you're leading by example, you're giving them permission, you're creating, you're preaching the value reward. It balloons on its own, and it takes tremendous pressure off the leader to feel like they got to have humor.
Absolutely. And this is where we're evolving some of our work. So the Humor That Works book, I think, is a fantastic book. It really sets the stage for why humor is so important in the workplace. And then it talks about these 10 strategies that kind of anyone can do. But since then, we've worked with a lot of people. And as I mentioned, kind of this idea, not are you funny, but what kind of funny are you? We've kind of identified these 7 primary humor personas that people have. So people can either be an enthusiast or curator. They might be an inventor or entertainer. They might be an engineer or an advocate, or they could be a skeptic, right? If they're not a fan of humor at all, they might be a little bit of a skeptic. And what's really beneficial as a leader is if you understand from your team their persona, where they are strongest, you can tap into that. You can leverage it. So you might have an enthusiast is just someone who kind of laughs and enjoys humor like a lot. They're a positive person. They're a great person to have in a leadership role because they support other people, right? They're kind of like, here's what you did well, right? That positive reinforcement. So if you know as a leader, you have an enthusiast on your team, one, you can get them to help in terms of pumping other people up. But two, you also want to make sure that you give them things to enjoy versus say you have an entertainer on your team, someone who just kind of is naturally funny or good at performing in front of other people. That's a great person to tap for emceeing one of your events. If you've got a virtual event or an in-person event, you're like, oh, okay, you're an entertainer. You've got this skill set. You like doing it. Help us to kick off this event. And now you're putting them in a position to succeed. And now you're leveraging their natural style of humor in a way that is going to be positive for the entire organization.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic to do that. And it actually shows an interest in your people, right? Finding what they actually are passionate about beyond just work.
Well, and it's a great way to promote it because, you know, in the book, we talk a little bit about why don't people use humor more, right? If there are these 30 benefits to using humor in the workplace, if I'm talking about why this is all amazing and stuff like that, why don't people use it more? And the number one reason, in fact, actually, I would love to see if people know. So go ahead and share in the chat. What do you think is the reason or what is a reason why people don't use humor in the workplace? What is holding people back? Because if I'm telling you there's 30 benefits like increased communication skills and increased productivity and you as an organization can be more profitable, et cetera, what's going to offend people, right? So yeah, I'm worried that people are going to be offended. It might be viewed as risky. They're going to be judged. There's a corporate culture, professionalism might seem inappropriate. Absolutely. These are all components and we can address the offended part of how to do that. But the number one reason, at least according to a study that we ran, the number one reason why people didn't use humor in the workplace more was because they didn't think that their boss or coworkers would approve, right? Which has a number of implications. One, maybe they wouldn't approve of that specific humor, but at a more broad level, what that means is that if you have a team or an organization where people aren't laughing with each other, if they're not smiling, if they're not engaged, if you have issues with retention or with attracting the right talent, there's something maybe wrong with the culture. And if there's something wrong with the culture around humor, you're probably part of the reason why as a leader. Not necessarily intentionally.
I don't think you need to go any further on that one.
Exactly. Yeah. But the idea is that if you're not using humor, if you're not promoting it yourself, then people aren't going to feel welcome to be able to use it. So it starts at the top. When you start to use it more and when you start to promote it, then that's when other people are like, oh, this is something that I can do. So yeah, and I'm happy to address some of these challenges that people.
Yeah, I actually have a number of questions here I'm going to go to from individuals that sort of sent it in early. And then I'll ask the room as well, just post your questions under Q&A and we'll come to them. But
before we head into the Q&A portion of this webcast, first, a brief note about PEO leadership from one of our members.
What I love about PEO leadership right now is how well our members are supporting each other and rising to face the COVID-19 challenge.
Paul Zadorsky, Senior Vice President, Crayola International.
Business is all about being able to rapidly adapt to change, but how do you learn as fast as the world changes?
PEO leadership lets you tap into the collective wisdom of some of Canada's top executives.
Having that peer group and broader leadership community to lean on, it makes all the difference.
The time to step up and lead is now. Go to peo-leadership.com.
Melanie Ruby, MD CFO of Grenenby Investments. In our current environment of cancel culture, that's a scary word, right, these days. Mm-hmm. The use of humor and specifically comedians having gone into hiding lest be offensive. What is your advice of the use of humor in a corporate setting? And I think everybody is scared of this.
It's a great question. It's an important one. And so I think there's a couple of things that come to mind when I think about this. So this is where affiliative and self-enhancing humor become really important, really thinking positive and inclusive types of humor. And again, this might not be the humor that you see in a comedy club, but it is something that's going to be more appropriate in the workplace. It's what's interesting about humor in a comedy club, what you can say is a lot more broad. You can say a lot more things. You can be a little bit more offensive. You can be edgy. You can say something that like is a little bit there. The problem with the comedy club is that the bar for what is funny is so much higher. Like if you do a stand-up show, the audience is there. That's almost like, make me laugh, I dare you. Versus in the workplace, the bar for what is humorous is so much lower. Just adding more pictures to your presentation so it's not you reading a wall full of text, that alone is starting to make it 1%, 5%, 10% more engaging. So the bar is much lower, but the stakes are much higher. Because absolutely, if you use inappropriate humor, then that could lead to being fired, could be lead to a loss of a client, could lead to a lawsuit. So you really want to make sure that that humor is appropriate. The way that we guide that is we suggest you think about the newspaper rule, right? Think about whatever you say or do from a humor perspective, would you want it showing up in the front page of your hometown newspaper? Or would you want it being blasted all over Twitter? And if you're like, I don't know if I'd want my entire company to read that I said this one particular joke to this one particular person, then probably not appropriate for the workplace. So I think part of it is changing that dynamic. The other thing that I would say about it is knowing what humor is appropriate is part of the skill of humor. Being to decipher between what's appropriate with friends versus what's appropriate with your coworkers is part of that skill of humor. And so when I hear people say, I refuse to use humor because of a cancel culture or because of everyone's too sensitive or PC, what I actually hear is usually one of three things. And this might be a little kind of, maybe it's a little aggressive for people. What I hear when I hear that is that one, either I'm too lazy to change my style of humor to adapt. Two, I'm not good enough at humor to be able to adapt to the current environment. Or three, I'm so prejudiced in whatever it is that I was going to say that I can't even think of a not prejudiced way to say something. And so to me, it is a, okay, well, yes, it's great that you recognize that people are a little bit more sensitive. So now let's learn that skill to be using humor appropriately so it's less sensitive. Because otherwise it's kind of like, oh, I don't use humor because people are too sensitive. It's like, do you also not drive a car because technically you could crash? Right? Like just because there are some risks to it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it at all because there are so many benefits to it.
I get it. All right. Another question here I got from Brian Beattie. He's VP Marketing at WS Audiology. What are some best practices in creating, incorporating humor and fun into a virtual staff meeting?
Virtual. So that's a great question. I think I am a huge fan of the chat. I think the chat is a great way to incorporate just a little bit of levity pretty quickly because you can get a response from everyone joining, right? If we were doing this in person live, I could not get a response from 88 people right now. We would be here forever to be like, all right, everyone share. What's the first thing you remember buying with your money? Okay, you go and you go and now you. But like in chat, like now I can ask that question and boom, we get everyone kind of answering very, very quickly. So I think chat is a great way to do it. I think another way to do it, and I don't have it set up right now, but there's a tool called Prezi Video where you can have slides pop up like right next to you. So rather than me sharing my screen, and me reading slides to you, it now pops up and it's like, oh, okay, I can actually go into detail about this particular subject matter. So that makes it more engaging because you still see individual people. I think depending on the group size, you can take advantage of things like breakout rooms. So our hands-on training programs, so our virtual keynotes, we don't really do it, but our hands-on training programs, like we've been doing a series of stress management workshops for the organization Rakuten, and we've been doing breakout rooms a lot where it's like, okay, now go into this room and have a discussion and then we'll come back so that you can still build relationships a little bit. So I think those, I think, are some effective ones. Some very practical ones. One is to really kind of try to look into your webcam, because that is a great way to make quote unquote eye contact with people. And a great piece of advice that I got from body language expert Mark Bowen was, he was like, put a little sticky note right next to your webcam with a smiley face on it, or put two little googly eyes.
I knew I was missing something. I got that, the little thing, but I don't have the smiley face.
You need the smiley face, but that reminds you to check in to. Yeah.
I like your face, not the smiley face.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's why, so what we do is I also have a teleprompter that I can use where it's like, oh, I can be looking at you, but also looking at the camera same time. So if you're doing a ton of virtual meetings or a ton of virtual presentations, you might invest in something like that. So you're like, oh, this is me making eye contact as well. So those are a couple of quick techniques. And I think some of the other techniques as well of adding stories to what you're sharing or adding a little bit more humor or levity. Some of these other specific framework things can certainly help in a virtual environment and in an in-person environment.
Just on the note of stress, you said you were going in, you were helping them with stress, deactivation of stress and stuff. Any pointers you can help us with here? Like it's a huge issue, right? That you could share with us today.
Absolutely. So just very, very quickly, in that program, we talk about four core strategies of managing stress. And we talk about this in the book as well around rebooting stress, because we recognize the goal is not to live in a stress-free environment. Stress is how we grow. Stress is how we become more efficient as an organization or as an employee. So it's not about saying zero stress whatsoever. It's about managing the stress throughout the day, because that helps us to be long-term more effective. So four quick strategies. One is to reject the things that cause you stress. So is there anything that you can not do? So for example, some people get really stressed out by listening to the news. Well, it's like, okay, well, can you maybe not listen to the news first thing in the morning? If that's going to make you stressed out for the first half of the day, then maybe listen to the news later that day or only once a week so that you're not getting triggered with this stress response constantly throughout the day. The second strategy is to reframe the things that cause you stress. So this kind of goes back to that idea of playing your work. If you have a specific task that you don't enjoy, can you try to find a way to make it 1%, 5%, or 10% more fun? So I shared reading emails and acts in your head, or I'm a huge fan of the Hamilton soundtrack. And so if I have to do a particular task that isn't exciting, that's just me, like writing or something, then I'll put on the Hamilton soundtrack while I'm doing it just to make it a little bit more enjoyable, because there's a million things that I haven't done, but
multitasking by an engineer. Unbelievable.
Exactly. Well, okay. At least with music, at least it's not a conscious like multitasking. Third strategy is to relieve the stress when it happens. So this is a really important one, is to recognize there's going to be things that you have to do that cause you stress, but how are you very intentionally relieving the stress after it happens? In fact, we can crowdsource some solutions or ideas right here. Go ahead and share in the chat, what is something that you do or could do and like 5 minutes or less that helps you to relieve just a little bit of stress? Share in the chat something that you do or could do to relieve a little bit of stress in about 5 minutes or less, right? So some breathing exercise, I'm a big fan of that. You could crack a joke, or you could even read a joke. You could force a laugh. Actually, that forcing a laugh is really interesting. That's from Sandra. That's an entire premise of laughter yoga. There are some people that lead laughter yoga sessions where it's all about creating a fake laugh, like forcing yourself to laugh until it becomes genuine. And your body doesn't know the difference between between authentic laughter and forced laughter. And so you still get some of those benefits of physiological, like blood flow, et cetera. Now, laughter yoga is interesting. And this is true for everything that I say. There's some things that are going to work for you. Some things that you're going to say, hey, that's not for me. Laughter yoga, I know the science of it. I know the benefits of it. It's still not for me. It's still, to me, as an engineer, a little weird to go in and force laughter. But for tons of people, it's tremendously powerful. So you want to try things out to see, right? Deep breathing, dancing. Yeah, I like some music and dancing. Maybe you are dancing right now while we're talking. Maybe, who knows? Yeah, yoga, the sun salutation, getting active, power pose for sure, like sitting power pose, watching Amy Cuddy's great TEDx talk on the TED talk on the benefits of body language, right? These are all great examples. So you can say, okay, when I have a stressful thing occur, can I go to this list and pick one of them? Can I be like, okay, I'm stressed out, I'm going to go pet my dog. Or I had a really tough meeting with a particular person, so I'm going to write something in my journal, right? So you can develop this list, relieve that stress. And then the fourth strategy is to recharge. And you recharge by taking your holiday, by taking vacation. You recharge by making sure that you are well rested and sleeping well. And you can also recharge throughout the day to say, okay, how can I take these strategic breaks throughout the day to make sure that I come back to my work with a little bit more energy?
That's great. All right, I'm pushing back to the questions here. I got three open questions here. Kent, Hatton, who's from Bayer, great part of PEO. Do you think you can be fun, but not overly funny, or humorous, but not hysterical? Oh my God, Kent. It's like,
absolutely. Yeah. And I would say the vast majority of people are, because when we think of someone who is quote unquote funny, a lot of times we think of stand-up comedians, or we think of what we would call that persona of the entertainer, where it's like, oh, everyone's just always laughing at what they say, right? But no, you can really effectively use humor without ever being the one that cracks the joke. In fact, one of the other personas is that of the curator. And the curator is someone who finds funny things, whether it's a funny quotation or a funny video or a funny image, and then shares it with other people. Because to effectively use humor at work, you don't have to be the one creating it. You can just be like, oh, this video actually makes a really good point that I want to make, so I'm going to send it out to people and then talk about why that video is valuable. Or in a presentation, adding to like virtual, adding in engaging virtual content, you can share an image of something. And in fact, one of my favorite is I found this picture of a sign that says, the sign itself says, danger, do not touch. Not only will this kill you, it will hurt the whole time you are dying. Like, it's a warning sign. And the picture, and to me, it's very funny. I didn't take the picture. I found it under a Creative Commons license that I can use. And now I use it as a point to kind of make, here's how you can get people to pay attention, is by being radically honest sometimes. And so that's an example of kind of curated humor. So I think absolutely, don't worry, you don't have to do it. But the interesting thing about the personas is that because humor is a skill, you can learn these other things. So maybe you're not to start overly funny or hysterical, but over time you can build that skill set, right? Because I will tell you, I am someone who's had to learn this skill of humor. That's what I talk about in the TEDx talk on the skill of humor, is like, when I told people from my high school that I did comedy, they said, but you're not funny. Right? So I was never the class clown or the life of the party type person. This I've had to learn kind of over time.
You've done a great job at that. So
thank you.
Great. All right. We got an anonymous attendee, mm-hmm. Mr. Anonymous, Mrs. Anonymous, don't know. How do you manage multiple generations, multiculture, et cetera?
Really, really, really important question, especially for our international groups, right? A challenging one of like, how do you use humor? And people had some of this as a concern, like, how do you know if it's going to land or resonate with people? And so there's a couple of things to keep in mind. I think at a high level, to maybe remove some of that fear that you're going to say something and people aren't going to laugh, recognize that if your humor is positive and inclusive, and you make a positive, inclusive joke and no one laughs, then it just becomes a positive, inclusive statement. Right? There's no real net negative effect to you trying it because it was positive and inclusive to begin with. Where you run into a problem if you try aggressive or negative humor and then that falls flat, that's when you impact both your credibility and your confidence. That's what studies have shown, right? If you use positive humor and no one laughs, people still see a boost in your confidence and no hit to your credibility. If it's positive humor and they laugh, they see you as more confident and as more credible. But if you use negative humor and no one laughs, then it impacts both of those things. So the importance of positive and inclusive. And then the other part of this is really understanding your audience, doing a little bit of research, understanding what works, what doesn't work, what do they find humorous, what do they find interesting. So part of that is research. Part of that is building a relationship with people. And the last thing that I'll say is there's a couple of types of humor that tend to work relatively well. The first is stories. Right. Like, so me starting with a story about my grandmother, almost every generation kind of that I've shared that with resonates with it. Older generations are like, that's totally been me. I had no idea what WTF actually stood for. And then younger generations are like, that's totally me as well. My grandmother has thought the same thing. So stories can be a great form of humor to use. Images are oftentimes a great form of humor to use, especially across multiple languages. Because if you find the right image, then you don't actually need, there's no language involved. Whatever language you naturally speak, you kind of process that image in. So that can be a great use of it. And I think activities. where you have people do something, right? Something kind of easy, like, hey, answering the question of what's the first thing that comes to mind that, or the first thing that you remember spending your own money on is a thing where no matter your generation, some people might say, I got a record. Some people might say CD, or some people might say, I downloaded an MP3, but it's still related to music and you can still have a connection over it.
It's great. I know we're running short on time. I know the questions are coming in. I'm going to end with Rick Bartel's question. He's the GM Fleet and Ops at Great Northern Insulation. And I think it's relevant to everybody. And he's asking, how do you introduce humor into the workplace? So you've now chatted with us all here. Mm-hmm. Many of us are leaders in our organizations. Mm-hmm. We all have our own personalities up to today. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to show up tomorrow. And we want to bring a little bit, want to change things up a bit. Any suggestions or advice?
Well, I mean, you certainly could hire a humor engineer who kind of looks like a skinny Hugh Jackman.
I love it.
Yes. Which is what some people say. No, but aside from that, like, which is why we do a lot of events is, right, we come in, we do an event to say, this is kind of what we mean by humor. And that's kind of permission for people to start. So absolutely, you could do that. You could even just send around the TEDx talk to be like, hey, I saw this interesting thing and share it. But more important than that, I think, is as leaders to start to use it and cultivate it yourself. And then start to recognize it when it's done well in the organization. So those would be the two places that I would start. So start to use it yourself. And I'm a huge fan of being very authentic and being very honest with people. So if I was a leader and I hadn't really done this before, I would probably, you know, maybe in my next meeting in a group with I know decently well, like start small. I would be like, hey, I just watched this interesting thing from PEO leadership. I was talking a little bit about humor. So I'm going to start to incorporate a little bit about it. You know, give me feedback on if you like it or not. But here's one thing I thought I would try. Here's a short story or here's whatever it is. But be authentic to say, hey, I'm going to test this out. That's one thing that I like to do. I think the other thing is to promote it. When you see someone in your organization do it well, a simple comment can go a long way in supporting that person and showcasing it to be like, hey, I just want to give a quick call out to so-and-so. Like I see that, Susan has done a great job of, we're talking about stress management and she manages stress by visualizing going to beaches and things like that. So what a great thing that we could all learn from. Thank you, Susan, for sharing that or whatever, right? Now you make Susan feel better because it's like, oh, hey, I kind of did this cool thing. And other people are like, oh, I could do that same thing. If I want to be rewarded or recognized in that same way, maybe I could try that. Or maybe I could try this saying that's slightly different. So I think those are the first two starting points. And then of course, yeah, hiring or sending out a video or sharing a handout, sharing with them this, you know, podcast when it comes out, great thing to do of like, hey, take a listen, see what you think.
That's great. I think you actually answered Mitt Wolf's question too, because he's talking about, he has a whole bunch of comedians. How do you convince corporations to sort of take a look at bringing them in? And I think you did a great job at answering it. Carol, I apologize for not getting to your question. Drew, thank you so much. Is there one over big macro message you want to leave us all with?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, a couple of things that I'm sharing in the chat is, first of all, my one, we have a link to the humor assessment. So if you are curious about what type of humorist you are, your natural style of humor, you can do that very quick free assessment you can take out. I've also shared my email address. So if we didn't get to your question or you have a different question come up, certainly feel free to reach out to me. You can also find me on all social media at Drew Tarvin. So if you prefer to connect over LinkedIn or something. But the last macro thing that I'll share is my encouragement from today is for you to simply try to drive one smile per hour. Try to think about or identify one thing that you can do that brings a smile to your face or the face of someone else. And it doesn't have to be grandiose, right? It can start with kind of being humorous, not hilarious. It can start just by saying, okay, can I read emails in an accent in my head? Or can I watch a funny YouTube video to laugh a little bit, relieve some stress, and show up more present for my family when I get home? What's that one thing that I can do each hour of the day? You start to develop a humor habit. You start to see how easy it is to make things just 1%, 5%, or 10% more fun. And you start to see this absolute change because you choose every single day how you're going to do your work. So why not choose to be more productive, less stressed, and happier? Why not choose to get better results and have more fun? Why not choose humor that works? Leon, thank you so much for having me. And to all of you, thank you all so much for joining.
I should close here. It's put a smile on your grandma's face. That's how we start with grandma. We should end with grandma. That could be one of the smiles people think about today. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank everyone for being with us today. Drew, thank you so much. What a great session. Please take Drew up on his links. You got to watch the TEDx talk. It's absolutely fantastic. And if you can, pick up his book. It took me a few days to read. It is an easy book to read and really gets you going and gets you motivated. So fantastic. If you're interested in any of our WayForward live webcasts, please visit us at poleadership.com. Visit our YouTube page. I mean, you'll see people like Zach Mercurio talk about purpose within the organization, yourself, your people, Kim Scott and Tier Bryant, Erica Dewan, Morgan Housel, Joe Jackman. Spread the word, please. This is how we grow. This is how we build a community at PEO Leadership. The content here is fantastic. Drew's just done a fantastic job as well. It's been great. Stay tuned for our next event in October. And I wish you all a great end of the week and a great month ahead. Take care, everyone. Let me introduce you to the Vaughan Metropolitan Center, an emerging downtown poised to be the financial innovation and cultural center of Vaughan. Major corporations and thousands of new residents are choosing downtown Vaughan because it's the perfect balance between downtown Toronto and the greater Toronto region. No other location offers this blend of subway and rapid bus transit with equal access to downtown and the suburb, Class A office space, and an urban lifestyle. As a result, this hub at Highways 400 and 407 is growing faster than expected. To learn more, visit myvmc.ca.